Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Around the Corner podcast, where we cover all things Cleveland Guardians minor leagues, and especially the prospects. I am your co-host, Matt Schlichting, joined as always by Brian Heminger. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great. We're hitting the All-Star break, so we're getting a little bit of a minor league break, and we just had the MLB draft, so just restocked the entire Cleveland minor league system. It's an exciting time.
And looking at the draft this year, which we'll get into in full a little bit later, but it was interesting because it seems like the Guardians took a few more bats this year than they have in the past.
Yeah, we'll get into the draft, but one thing I'll mention is, if you remember, 3 years ago, we had the COVID draft. And that was only five rounds. So because of that, a lot of players that maybe would have been drafted that year, especially out of high school, ended up not being drafted. And then they just decided to keep their college commitments and go to college. That's why in 2021, there were a lot more college seniors that got drafted, because several juniors that normally would have been drafted, four-year juniors, did not and waited a year. And then this year we're getting a lot of those high school players are now draft eligible again from college. So it just made a bumper crop of position players, just absolutely loaded with position players. I think a lot of the elite high school arms that were going to get drafted still ended up getting drafted. So we didn't have quite as many pitchers, but it was just the deepest position player draft I think that they've possibly ever had.
It's interesting to think that the pandemic and the five picks that year and then going down to 20 rounds, I guess it makes sense that it would have caused not a backlog, but like you said, more of a bumper crop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's kind of a backlog. Yeah, that too. Because, yeah, a lot of the guys that were available this year might have been gone and taken when they were high schoolers. So that's really what happened. Yeah, there were a few elite arms still. I mean, a pitcher went number one overall. But, I mean, I think there was like a stretch where there were like 10 straight college bats taken in the first round, which is just nuts.
It's a little unusual. I've never heard of anything like that.
Yeah, and I think this year was the fewest amount of high school arms drafted in the first round. I think only one. And that's usually a lot more common. So
one in the first round is actually a little shocking to hear.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there were still quite a few. Cleveland ended up getting quite a few high school arms later on, which will be interesting to see, you know, if they should be able to sign everything. Cleveland usually doesn't make a pick unless they know they're going to sign somebody, especially since it's dropped down to 20 rounds. But yeah, really, really interesting. I can't wait to talk a little bit more about who they drafted.
Yep. And we will get there a little bit later on, but I will kick us off and get into the top 10 countdown, where I can report that Daniel Espino still has not pitched.
Yep, and he is not going to pitch for a while longer, not till next year.
We wish him the best. We hope to see him soon. Now, moving on to someone who is pitching actively, what can you tell us about Sir Gavin Williams?
Yeah, Gavin Williams made two starts. They were both not bad, not great. The first one was against the Braves, and I think he gave us six innings against the Braves. Did give up three home runs in that one, but gave us a chance to win that game, which was really impressive. Ended up going, I think, six innings, four runs. All the home runs were solo shots, so didn't get hurt too badly. And then his next start, he faced the Royals again, got touched up a little bit as he got deeper into this one, but still gave the team, I think, another six innings and gave up three runs. They ended up winning that game. So I thought, you know, rock solid. It's not going to look the prettiest because of the ERA, but he gave the team a chance to win in both games. Went two games started, 12 innings, struck out nine, walked three, All three of those home runs were given up in the Braves games. 7 runs allowed total for a 5.25 ERA. I think the bright side of this, for the most part, is the fact that he only walked 3 guys in 12 innings after, you know, he walked, I think, 4 in his MLB debut. So he's doing a much better job of trusting his stuff and throwing strikes.
Thinking about these starts, if let's just say it's a random rookie pitcher and you say he gives up 3 home runs but gives his team a chance to win after pitching 6 innings against the best team in baseball, and then his next time out looks very good, pitches another 6 innings, you'd be ecstatic. That's a rookie. Great. So a little bit of the pedigree that Gavin Williams brings with him, I think, might color performances some, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, I'd be happy with what he's done so far each time out. I mean, so, yeah, the first game, I think he went 6 1/3 against the Braves and gave up 4 runs, and then he gave up 3 runs in 5 2/3 against the Royals. And I think the first one we lost 4-2, but it was a very winnable game. And then that last one, we won like 10-6 or something like that. So, yeah, I'm ecstatic with what I'm seeing so far out of him. He looks like he belongs.
The next man on our list is George Valera, who had a little bit of an interesting time in the last 2 weeks.
he definitely did. Tell us all about it, Matt.
So he slashed .258, .361, .323. Good for a WRC plus of 81. We love to see the walks up around .361, and a little bit of a power outage can happen. The most important thing is that he got into a benches. He might have ignited a benches clearing brawl. If you haven't seen the video, he is in the middle of an at-bat, and he turns and either says something to the catcher or the umpire. It's not quite clear. The umpire then sort of reaches for the catcher, but it's too late. He's up in George Valera's face. I haven't seen any additional details about what may or may not have been said, which is probably a credit to everyone involved at the end of the day. But something set Valera off. He started really going after the catcher, and as a result, was suspended.
Yep. I haven't seen how many okay, it's 6 games. I was actually wondering how many games it was, but it was announced 6 games.
I think to see a player get suspended.
No, I do not, especially because I know his numbers aren't amazing in this, but in the last like 3 or 4 games, he had been scorching hot. He was finally heating up. He was finally starting to see the ball. Well, Cleveland has a need for another outfielder with the way Miles Straw has been producing offensively, you know. And this was a perfect opportunity for him to get scorching hot and get called up, like, by the end of the month, you would think. Maybe sooner. And then he does this. I mean, I've heard a lot of things, of really good things about his makeup. So I don't know what this guy said, and I don't know if we ever will. But it just blows my mind that the timing was just terrible. And I know he wasn't trying to, but it looks like he made a little bit of contact with the umpire, because the umpire at first was in between him and the catcher. So you never want to touch an umpire. He didn't like shove the umpire hard or hit him or do anything really stupid, but just the fact that he kind of like moved the umpire a little bit out of the way to get back to that catcher, and then the umpire had to like bail out of there. Not a good sign. But yeah, 6 game suspension. He earned it. I doubt that Cleveland's going to, you know, like the player association gonna, you know, appeal or anything. Like, he's serving those 6 games. But yeah, absolutely should not have done that, because he had been 1-for-1 that game. The previous like 2 or 3 games, he had been doing really, really well. So just a blown opportunity for George Valera to finally wake up in AAA and start earning an opportunity to come to Cleveland. So this might, you know, who knows, but depending if Cleveland makes a trade or something, you know, this might cost him a chance to come up this season.
It is a little bit sad. Yes. Hopefully he comes back from the suspension, picks up right where he left off. However, time, it always wins, and he just lost some of it.
Yep. And for, especially considering he's been on the injured list twice this season, like, he needs to get in as many games as possible, and to not be playing when you're healthy is even worse. So, yep.
We will move right on to a AAA teammate of George Valera's by the name of Brian Rocchio.
Yeah, Rocchio had a rock-solid stretch there of 11 games where he slashed 313, 411, 417, good for a 117 WRC+, BABIP 333, struck out just 5.4%, walked 8.9%. In 48 at-bats, he had 15 hits, 11 singles, 3 doubles, a triple, scored 10 runs, knocked in 10 runs, walked 5 times, struck out just 3, was hit by 3 pitches, and then stole a base. So, you know, just excellent. I would love to see more power, but everything else looks sensational. Like, he is playing well.
Yeah, that's a wonderful stretch of 11 games.
Yeah. And with Gabriel Arias apparently in the doghouse at the MLB level, it might just be only a matter of time before they kind of swap places.
Interesting things could happen here after the All-Star break, and we'll have to keep our eyes peeled.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about our next candidate, a certain Bo Naylor.
He had an interesting stretch of games in the last couple of weeks before the break. All told, he ended up slashing 259, 333, 444, good for a WRC plus of 117. I want to come back to that number. BABIP of 333, struck out 26.7% of the time, but walked 10% of the time. Tossed a home run onto the pile, which was very nice to see. A couple of doubles. He had a scorching hot game, then went on a bit of a slump for about a week.
Yep.
And then
another scorching hot game.
Yeah.
So I would love to see a little bit more consistency out of Bo. But, man, those games where he goes like 4 for 4, like all of a sudden our offense just erupts because we're not just relying on, you know, Jose and Josh Naylor.
I am starting to wonder if there is a possibility that the league has focused so much on catcher defense that there are now diminishing returns to some extent, and having a really good hitter behind the plate just changes everything.
It does. I don't think he's going to be batting ninth for too much longer either. Yeah, I mean, this was a guy that was a middle of the bat player, went at every level he's ever played, or top of the order. So, yeah, it's only a matter of time until he starts moving up the order. I mean, you cannot be giving Miles Straw more at-bats than Bo Naylor. It just, you cannot do that.
So I want to circle back to the WRC plus number. One thing to keep in mind about that stat is that it is adjusted for the league and level of the player. So Rocchio at AAA had a 117 WRC plus and slashed 313, 411, 417. Bo Naylor had a WRC plus of 117 at the major league level, slashing 259, 333, 444. And just an interesting comparison of the offensive environments between AAA and the majors in that snapshot.
Well, one thing you also got to factor in is that Bo had more power during that stretch and Bo walked more. So even though Rocchio made more contact, Bo's contact was like a more significant contact. So that gets factored in as well. It's not just that Bo did better comparatively to, you know, other catchers. It's, because I don't think they just compare it to catchers. I think they compare it to all MLB players.
Yeah, it's a league average.
Yeah.
Rather than positional.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just, yeah, really good. Really good to see Bo, you know, have some of those moments. I don't know if I would trade a few of those 4 for 4 games to just have him have a couple more 2 for 4 games instead of go 4 for 4 and then 0 for 20 and then 4 for 4 again. But I'll take what I'm getting because he looks like he belongs.
It's been very fun to finally see him at the highest level.
It's just wonderful not to have to curse it at the screen every time the catcher comes up to bat, too.
It makes a difference. What can you tell us about number 6 on the list?
Yeah, Angel Martinez. He's had a little bit of a rough season at AA, but it looks like he is snapping out of it. During his last 11 games, he slashed 325, 391, 400, good for a 120 WRC+, had a 361 BABIP, struck out 10.6% of the time, walked 8.5% of the time, 40 at-bats. He had 11 singles, a double, a triple. He scored 6 runs, knocked in 3, walked 4 times, struck out 5, got hit by a pitch, stole a base. So just making a lot of really good contact. Not a lot of loud contact, not a ton of extra base hits with just 11 singles and 13 hit out of his 13 hits, but just the fact that he is seeing the ball better and making better contact and getting on base is very good to see, because, you know, this was supposed to be an opportunity for him to potentially leapfrog a few of the guys ahead of him this season, because he was added to the 40-man roster, and he just hasn't taken advantage of that opportunity at Double-A. So really good to see Angel Martinez having a strong couple weeks, and hopefully he can kind of use that to catapult himself towards the second half of the season.
Yeah, it was a great way to end the first half, get himself set up for the rest of the year.
Yeah, tremendous performance. So really, really happy for Angel Martinez. And I think you're going to be a little excited to talk about this next guy, somebody we haven't really had a chance to talk about much this season, Chase DeLauder.
He slashed 469, 469, 781 at high A. That's a WRC plus of 251. His BABIP was above 500, which means that he was just annihilating everything. You don't need to walk if you hit 469, so he said, why bother?
Yeah, for people concerned that he didn't walk, it's the fact that anytime somebody threw a strike to him, he destroyed it. He absolutely obliterated it. So he doesn't need to walk if he's crushing the baseball like this.
7 doubles, a home run, 7 runs driven in. Stole a bag, too. Why not?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I love it. I love it. I mean, he was hitting well at the Complex League, and then he gets promoted, and he hits even better in Lake County. So he gets promoted 2 levels. I mean, he didn't really get promoted. He got activated at 2 levels because that's where they were going to play him. And he was doing a rehab assignment. And he looks healthy. He is seeing the ball well. He is playing like a first-round draft pick. We haven't had, like, somebody making this kind of impact at the full season in years, maybe since like Clint Frazier and Bradley Zimmer, when they were at the low levels, when we were really hyping them up. So I'm really, really excited with what I'm seeing right now. I mean, cause it's not just like he's making like little slap hits. I mean, he is smoking the baseball. I mean,
this 15 starts with 7.
Yeah. He had more extra base hits than singles. I mean, he had 7 doubles, 7 singles and a home run. And one of those doubles should have been a triple, but I think he ground ruled it.
Oh.
Because he was at third base, and I think they had to call him back.
Early returns still. I mean, this was an 8-game stretch. I'm not sure how many he played in the previous 2 weeks, but everything that we've seen so far is very positive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to stay at Lake County for very long. Like, I mean, if he's crushing this hard, and the fact that Lake County or Akron does have some openings, I think Jonathan Rodriguez is playing well enough at Akron that he should get promoted to AAA. And DeLauder could come up and take his spot at AA at this point. I mean, I kind of want to see it.
You know what DeLauder should do? Keep hitting everything.
Yes.
Coach gets on him. Like, draw some walks. Come on. You need to develop your eye. Well, it's not my fault to hang everything, bud.
Yeah.
Call me up.
And it's not like he's striking out a ton. I mean, he struck out, what, 12%? So I'm sure that he's being a little over-aggressive, and he probably swung at a few pitches outside the zone. But it looks like he is not missing when it's in the zone,
when you're
which
feeling
I am
it,
loving.
You're feeling it, and you let that guy swing.
Yeah.
Just, wow.
You know, this is great. Like, and what's nuts was he was already doing well, and then he had a 4-for-4 game with 3 doubles. So yes, keep going, Chase DeLauder. My God. I mean, what an impact already he's had on that Lake County. So yeah, I mean, I know it's a small sample size. He's only played there for like 3 weeks, but what a 3 weeks. So
he owns it, I believe.
I can't wait to see more of him. Like this All-Star break could not have come at a worse time for him because he is just scorching hot. So I just hope it doesn't cool him off. But yeah, just a wonderful performance by Chase DeLauder. I mean, this is exactly what you want to see out of your first round pick. Like, I know, you know, he's still three levels away from MLB, but he could be the answer to all of our problems. I know he's not going to make it to Cleveland this year, but my God, he might make it next year.
I'm trying. I know it won't happen, but wouldn't it be neat if he did just keep hitting like this, makes it, gets a September call up or something, and we get to go look at his stats later. Like, wait, he went from the Complex League to MLB his first season?
Yeah, that would be nuts.
It's the legend of DeLauder.
Because usually it's a pitcher that, you know, has a rocket strapped to him and flies through the system. You think of like somebody like Nick Sandlin, who made it to like Double A the year he was drafted. Chase DeLauder has a really good chance to move quickly if he continues hitting like this. I don't know if he's going to be able to keep that up, but man, I would love to see it.
Agreed. This brings us to number 8, a Joey Cantillo or Cantillo. I can neither confirm nor deny either of those pronunciations, but he made a start, and how did he do?
Yeah, it was a great start. It was at AAA, made one start, pitched 5 innings, struck out 7, gave up 1 run on 3 hits, did walk 4, which has kind of been an ongoing problem for him all season. But, you know, 1.8 ERA in that one start. And I will add, he did more than just that one start. I don't know if you saw, but he was Cleveland's representative in the Futures game. And he pitched a scoreless inning and struck out some pretty nasty dudes. So let me see if I can find a Futures game box score anywhere.
I was a little checked out on All-Star Game festivities this year.
So let's see. Pitching for the AL Futures. Yeah, he pitched 1 2/3 innings, struck out 2, walked 1. And I think he was hitting 98 miles an hour. Yes, please, indeed. So he is looking great. But yes, he was Cleveland's Futures game. They only had one this year. They probably would have had more, but they just keep calling them up. Like, it could have been Bo Naylor or Gavin Williams or Tanner Bibee or Logan Allen, but, you know, they all made it to Cleveland.
Yeah, they're in the show now. One thing I was thinking about earlier today, putting the list together, is system churn. And just thinking it would be interesting to compare the total number of call-ups over, say, a 5-year period from organization to organization, just to see how many guys they go through, I guess, in a given period. So there's definitely something to be said for the Guardians system in that in the last couple of years, many guys have been promoted and the system is still very good.
Yeah, I'll say right now, due to all of the recent promotions, our system is a little bit weaker than it's been in previous years, especially at the higher level of prospects, just because, you know, Bo's in Cleveland, Gavin's in Cleveland, Tanner lost his prospect status, Logan Allen lost his prospect status, Freeman lost his prospect status, Arias lost his prospect status, Brennan lost his prospect status. So, I mean, we have had a ton of guys that we've had to churn through our top 10 this year, and we're going to lose a couple more now here soon with Bo and Gavin probably.
It's going to be close to a whole new list of guys.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to just completely go through this top 10. I mean, we were probably a top 3 system to begin the season. We might not be top 10 by the end of the season just because of the upper level of prospects and the fact that they're like of the guys that hadn't been in that top 20 and were trying to earn their way. We haven't had a ton of standout guys this year. So that just are trying to take advantage of that opportunity to become, you know, an elite prospect. Like, it seems more like we're relying a little bit on that next level of international prospects like Churio and Francisca. We'll be talking about them a little bit more later, but, and who we drafted. But that's also something is this time of year, this is right when you restock the system, when we have that MLB draft, because the system is a little light.
It's an exciting time.
So I guess moving on, we've got a certain Juan Brito. So tell us a little bit about Juan Brito at number 9.
He slashed 188, 282, 313 It was a WRC plus of 63. His BABIP was a little lower at 238, but he struck out more than 30% of the time. 12 total strikeouts in 10 games. Yeah. Yeah. 5 walks, 8 RBIs.
Did hit a home run.
We like the dingers.
Yeah.
He had a double. And just, you know, it was a tough stretch.
Yeah, this was to be expected. I mean, he wasn't going to stay scorching hot after getting promoted to AA.
But he could have.
It would have been great. But he was due to have a bit of a slow stretch after being promoted. I mean, you're facing tougher pitching. You can't just keep killing it. I mean, that's just not sustainable. So I'm okay with it. He did hit a home run. He still drew a few walks. You know, he still had a walk rate over 10%, which is insane. So I'm fine with it. I just, as long as it doesn't stay this way all season, but, and I don't think it will. I mean, he is just too good of a hitter to, you know, have a really slow stretch for an extended period of time. I think when you've got a player with such a good eye at the plate, it kind of makes you slump proof. I mean, you might have a 2-week stretch, but it's very rare you're going to have like a month stretch.
And he may very well come back after the break and pick right back up. We talked about DeLauder hitting it at not a great time because of how hot he's been playing, but maybe for a guy like Brito, it's exactly what he needs to step away, come back, forget all about it, start raking again. Tell me, Brian, about Welbin Francisca.
Yeah, our number 10 prospect here, our top international signing this past year, had a slash of 250, 323, 357, WRC plus of 80. So his first little tough stretch here at the DSL. You know, all of us screaming for him to get promoted to Arizona already, you know, might have to hold our horses a little bit. But it's not like he was terrible. He still had a walk rate of 9.7%. Did strike out 25%, which is a little concerning, but BABIP was still okay at 350. Had 7 hits, 5 singles, a double, a triple, scored 3 runs, knocked in 3 runs, stole 2 bases. So not a great stretch, but, you know, far from a horrible stretch too. So, I mean, that's, you know, he hit better than Miles Straw.
I was going to say, I'd be surprised if there are many hitters for whom you can't find a random 2-week stretch where they, even the best hitters probably have a 2-week stretch where they're at 80, 70 WRC plus or so, just because baseball, it's chaos.
Yep. So he'll be fine. He is too talented to have an extended long stretch. I think I would not be surprised if he has like a 150 WRC plus the next time we see him.
Make a little note here. We'll see what
I'm
happens.
Calling it.
So we always like to do a countdown of the top 5 players in the system, regardless of prospect pedigree. So this can include players from the top 10, but it's nice to give a little shout out to guys who maybe you're not going to hear their name very often for now. So kicking off the leaderboard this week, we had Chase DeLauder.
Yeah, I mean, we had to include Chase DeLauder. When you scorch a 251 WRC plus, it would be a criminal malfeasance to not include Chase DeLauder.
Also gracing the list is a certain Daniel Schneemann. I will withhold his stats until the cupboard because I can. Because
he has returned to your corner cupboard. So
he may never leave at this point.
You please never leave. Because it almost seemed like the last year when you had him, you just had him in there almost because he had an interesting name. And all of a sudden this year, he's having a breakout season. So I am ecstatic to see what his stats are for this stretch.
The corner cupboard has mysterious powers.
Yes.
One of his teammates also made the countdown this week, Micah Priess. How did he do?
Yeah, Micah Priess was insane. During an 11-game stretch with the Columbus Clippers, he slashed 413, 438, 957. 957. That means he was hitting for some power, baby. WRC plus was 232, BABIP 394, strikeout rate 14.6, walk rate 4.2. But here's what stood out. In those 11 games, he had 6 home runs, and I think 5 of them happened in about a 2 or 3 game stretch. I think 4 of them happened in a 2 game stretch. Like, it was absolutely nuts. He just went off, which is great, because this is a guy that I was kind of interested in as somebody that could help Cleveland. Like, somebody like, we've seen David Fry help Cleveland, and I was like,
which is majestic.
Yeah, which has just been wonderful. Like, the David Fry, like, explosion in Cleveland has been so fun to see. And I was thinking that this guy, Micah Priest, was going to have an opportunity in Cleveland. He's a guy that can play outfield. He can play first base. He can DH, obviously. And he hits for power. He hits for contact. Problem is, he's another left-handed bat. And we've got quite a few of those. So, you know, he's not going to displace Will Brennan, who is also a left-handed bat in a corner outfield spot and plays better defense. So, you know, he's just going to have to hit his way. And he got off to a slow start this season, but this has been very nice to see.
I pulled up his splits because I was curious to see how it breaks down. He had a bad April, May, and June. I mean, June was playable, but no, I guess no, his April was actually halfway decent. I've read that as 181 in my head. In April, he slashed 281, 346, 469. Fine. May was tough. He slashed 130, 281, 182. Picked it back a little bit in June. Had a 717 OPS altogether. But so far in July, in the 8 games he's played, 455, 486, 1.030 is his slug in July.
Yeah, I mean, it was only a matter of time because he's hit at every level he's ever played. I mean, it's nuts because he was a 13th round draft pick out of college. And in 2021, when he made his debut, he had a 150 WRC plus at full season single A. Then he had a 116 WRC plus after getting promoted to high A during the season. So then he jumped straight to double A last year, where he had a 119 WRC plus for the whole season. And this year, I think it was down, like, heading up until this last 2-week stretch, his WRC plus was like 70 for the whole season. It just didn't make sense, especially because he looked good in spring training too. Like, I was like, man, this guy might make the team. And then he's struggled at AAA. Now his WRC plus is back to 90. So if he stays scorching hot, he'll get that back up over 100 where it belongs, because this guy hits.
I remember first becoming aware of him.
Yeah, I think I had him on my corner cupboard in 2021.
Yeah. The interesting thing to keep in mind with him is that he was drafted in 2019, didn't play, COVID year, didn't play.
And the year,
sitting around for 2 years, not playing baseball.
I think he had Tommy John surgery as a position player.
Well.
Like around 2019 as well.
That's a tough run of it.
Mm-hmm. But you do heal faster when you're a position player and not having to pitch.
I would advise listeners to put him in your personal corner cupboard, as it were.
Keep an eye on him.
We may hear more of him.
Because, yeah, he is one of those guys at AAA that, you know, say something happens, somebody gets hurt, he's somebody that they could call on. Absolutely. Moving on, I guess, he is no longer in my corner cupboard, so we should be talking about our next player in the top 5 for the week.
He goes by Will Dion and or Baby Kershaw. In 2 starts, he pitched 12 innings, allowed 11 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks. It says 0 strikeouts at the end of this, but that's a typo on my part. I'll look it up here in a second. 8.25 strikeouts per 9, good for a strikeout rate of 25.6, only walking a little less than 5% of hitters faced.
I'm guessing 10 or 11.
Something like that.
Based on the K per 9.
ERA of 1.5. Excellent. Whip of 1.08.
And it should
two
be
really
noted,
good starts.
It should be noted that he did this at double A, because he was promoted to double A about a month ago. So the fact that he got promoted and he makes our top 5 of the week after being promoted, good for him, man. Like, people were saying, you know, this guy doesn't throw very hard. He's, you know, not that much of a prospect. And honestly, out of our 2021 draft, he's been the next best performer after Gavin Williams and Tanner Bibee at this point. And he's doing it as, I think, an eighth round pick. Let me double check. I'm pretty sure he was an eighth round pick in 2021. Ninth round pick. So, yeah, I mean, we took like eight or nine guys ahead of him. And yeah, he is just doing excellent. So great to see. And I think I heard he was hitting about 94, which is not bad at all.
That's not soft tossing.
Yeah, that's not that soft tossing at all. I'm not saying he was averaging 94. I think he topped at 94, but the fact that you're topping at 94, I mean, that's what Logan Allen throws, and he was having success at MLB. So
we'll have to keep an eye on him. Now, the next player on the list, I know nothing about, but just tell me about Esteban Gonzalez.
Yes. He is a outfielder that Cleveland signed. He's 20 years old, just turned 20, has been playing in the Complex League. And over the last 2 week stretch, he played six games, slashed 500, 571, 909. Good for a 239 WRC plus. In that stretch, he had 22 at bats, 28 plate appearances, 11 hits. Of those 11 hits, five singles, four doubles, a triple, a home run. This is just nuts. Scored 12 runs, knocked in five walks, hit by pitch, stole five bases, did not get caught stealing. This might be a guy worth paying attention to. He's undersized, 5'8", playing in the Arizona Complex League. What's interesting is in 2021, he made his pro debut in the Dominican League and put up a 149 WRC plus for the whole season. Just scorching. That was as an 18-year-old. And then last year, he played in the Complex League and was league average, 95 WRC plus over the whole year. And his first year, he had no home runs as an 18-year-old. Last year, he had one. This year, he's already got four in half as many games. So he is finding his power. And he's stolen a career-high 10 bases already in half as many games. Like, last year, he played 38. This year, he's played 19. And last year, he had five steals. He's already got 10. Last year, he had one home run. This year, he's got four. So he is really, really looking interesting in that Arizona Complex League as a pretty impressive bat. So somebody I'm going to be keeping an eye on moving forward.
Those are numbers that shout.
Yeah, because that's the cool part is, you know, yeah, he had this scorching stretch, but he only hit one of his four home runs during it. So, I mean, he is still crushing home runs in his other stretch. And maybe he's somebody that I missed as a top five player of the week previously, too.
The five stolen bases on top of everything else just feels unfair.
Exactly.
I'm not mad. I'm thrilled. Yeah,
I'm liking this guy. So, I know that Churio is the one that everybody's talking about, and he's still playing great. Like, he's on like a 13-game on base streak or something ridiculous, and he's been one of the best young hitters in the Arizona Complex League, and his brother's one of the best prospects in baseball. But yeah, keep an eye on Esteban Gonzalez.
Very good baseball name, too. Some other guys I want to mention, won't read the stats, but a friend of the podcast, Mylan Tolentino, had a nice couple of weeks. We also want to mention Magnus Ehlertz and Austin Peterson.
Yeah, and they're both pitchers.
Yeah, so look them up, fools. That brings us to the corner cupboard, which this week is actually sponsored by Kroger. Kroger, none of our shopping carts work.
Well, I'll let you get started with Mr. Schneeman, since he was a top five of the week, and you've been withholding his stats from everyone.
Cruelly, I know. Daniel Schneeman. This is... it's been fun to watch him go off this season. He slashed 408, 482, 653 in the last 11 games played. That is a 186 WRC plus at AAA. Three home runs, three doubles, seven walks, stole a base. 12.5% walk rate, 21.4% strikeout rate, but kind of a dominant stretch of baseball.
Yeah, this is awesome to see. Do you know what round he was drafted?
It's like the 23rd?
No. 33rd. That round does not exist.
I can confirm.
So the fact that he is having so much success is just so great to see. Like, he's literally having his best season at AAA this year. So in his first time that he's spent his whole season at AAA, his whole career, and he is having by far his best season. Like, he's had some good stretches. Like, he had a, you know, 120 WRC plus in 2019 for the whole season. I think he was at the lowest full season level. And he had a 111 WRC plus at AA in 2021. You know, that was only over a 25 game stretch, but he's played 62 games and he's got a 136 WRC plus for the season. Like, it's time to take notice of Daniel Schneeman.
And I'm not sure if there's room on the roster at the major league level for him this season, but if I were another team,
he's
a guy I may be interested in.
He is going to play at the MLB level at this rate. Like, it is going to happen for him. And I think, you know, what helps him is he can play a lot of positions. I think this year so far he's played, 12 games at second base. He's played 34 games at third base. He's played 18 games at shortstop. So, you know, you need a guy that can play, you know, any position on the infield, all the tough positions. He's your guy and looks like he can fill in and make some solid contact too.
Just had a thought, but I'm going to hold my tongue and will not speculate wildly this week.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really the only thing going against him is the fact that he's 26 years old. I mean, it's pretty old for a prospect, but hey, I don't think Corey Kluber debuted until he was like 27 or 28. So
26 isn't that old for the major leagues. And we're not saying Daniel Schneeman's going to show up as a Red Sox or something and win an MVP. But like you said, this is starting to look like a guy who can contribute to a major league roster over the full course of a season, maybe. And that has value, especially if you can play multiple positions.
Yep. Hmm. Yeah, I'm ecstatic for him. I wrote him off. I will admit, last year, you had him on your corner cover, and I was like, why is Matt got Daniel Schneeman on his corner cover? And then you take him off because he had a rough stretch, and I'm like, well, that's just Matt being Matt. And now all of a sudden, Daniel Schneeman is just going off, and I'm just so happy. I'm mad at myself for underestimating Daniel Schneeman.
A quick hat tip to the Schneeman's demons. He does have a small.
Is that like Grady's ladies?
Yes.
except it's all dudes.
Bunch of baseball nerds who are excited he's playing well, Brian. It's awesome. This guy also had a really good week. How was Joe Lampe?
Yeah, Joe Lampe, Cleveland, I think second or third round pick this past season. He was playing alongside Chase DeLauder, maybe inspired, got himself out of his slump. And during his last 2 week stretch, had a WRC plus of 154, slashing 308, 400, 487. Yeah, 364 BABIP, 13.3% strikeout rate, 6.7% walk rate. Had 12 hits in 39 at-bats, 6 singles, 5 doubles, a triple, scored 4 runs, knocked in 3s, walked 3 times, stole 3 bases, hit by 3 pitches. So, great job, Joe Lampe. He bounced back. And I knew he would.
I know it's not the best thing, but I love seeing a guy get hit by 3 pitches in a couple weeks. I just wonder if a guy who's not committed ever does that. I don't know.
Yeah, Cleveland just has a propensity for finding these guys that get drilled.
It's because they listen to our podcast, yeah, obviously.
Jimenez gets drilled. Tyler Freeman gets drilled. Greg Allen was a human magnet. Obviously, they traded for Brandon Guyer, who set the record. So, I don't know. Maybe that's just something that they look for that other teams are missing. It's easier to get on base. It just takes one pitch instead of having to see 4 balls.
It feels like it's definitely a skill.
I mean, I think the skill part is getting drilled without going on the injured list. So.
Right. Some guys, like Rizzo, always comes to mind as a guy in the majors who gets hit a lot every season. It's just how he sets up at the plate. Eddie Murray comes to mind as a guy who almost never really got hit by a pitch. I'm just wondering, can you teach a guy to Can you teach a guy to get drilled?
It's got to be about, you know, somebody that hogs the plate a little bit, really crowds it, and then just doesn't dance away as quickly. Maybe it's a reaction time thing.
Can maybe you coach bad. A player to bad. Take one for the team?
Yeah, maybe it's a bad thing because you would think, like, you know, a faster reaction time, they'd be able to get out of the way. But I don't know.
Yeah. It gets you on base.
Mm-hmm.
And bruises are things you can show off.
There we go.
Anyway, I will move along to the pitcher in my cupboard, Jack Leftwich. Now, he was returning from a stint on the injured list. Was it an elbow strain?
Shoulder
strain.
And I don't know if it was a strain. I just know it was shoulder.
So he was on the injured list with shoulder. he came back and pitched 2 innings, faced 8 batters. He pitched 2 innings. I'm going to give extra stats. 1 hit allowed, 1 walk, threw a wild pitch. Shame. Struck out 1. Didn't allow any runs, though.
Hey, all right.
Throwing scratch baseball.
He's had a tough year because, you know, alongside Will Dion, he was one of those, you know, guys to keep an eye on other than Bibee and Williams as somebody that could be helping Cleveland soon, and began the year at AA, very aggressive promotion, and just has not had a strong season. So I'm wondering if that shoulder was something that was bothering him all year and that he just needed to take a little bit of a break. And maybe this will be, you know, what sets him up for a strong second half.
I also wonder, this is just idle wondering, but he came back and pitched 2 innings on the 7th. I wonder what throwing program he's on during the break, because I feel like they wouldn't have put him out there unless they had a plan for him to continue throwing during the All-Star break. It'd be kind of weird. I don't know. I'll never know.
Yeah, and my dude, Parker Messick, he got promoted to Lake County, and he's going through it a little bit. During this stretch, he had 2 games started and made a piggyback appearance, so 3 appearances total, but they weren't so hot. He went 14.1 innings pitched, gave up 15 earned runs, 18 runs, 23 hits. The good news was he didn't walk a lot of guys. Problem was he was not missing bats whatsoever. He got knocked around, so had 11 strikeouts, 4 walks, hit 3 batters. So, you know, he was kind of the Cleveland batter of a pitcher, if that makes sense. But yeah, 9.42 ERA, yeah, not so great. So yeah, tough stretch, but hey, he's adapting to a promotion. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt for somebody that's, you know, starting to face tougher hitters after pitching the first, like, 10 games of the season at a lower level.
I feel like you said he's at Double A now.
No, he started the year at Lynchburg. He's at Lake County now.
Okay.
Cause he was our second round pick last year.
Got it.
So, I mean, he is at this point, the furthest advanced pitcher from last season. I think a lot of people thought Justin Campbell would have like started at Lake County, but he has not had a chance to pitch this year because of that elbow injury. Yeah. So again, I'm not going to hold anything against him for, you know, struggling in after being promoted to another level. Like, there's always going to be a period where you have to adapt. So definitely not giving up on Parker Messick. He's too talented.
It's what I find interesting is as rough as those numbers are, they still let him pitch 14 innings in 2 games.
Exactly.
So they're confident in him too.
He wore it a little bit.
Interesting. Moving right along, we have some injuries and transactions to discuss.
Yeah. Starting from the beginning, we had Luis Oviedo activated in Columbus from the injured list. Josh Wolf activated from the injured list in Lake County. A promotion to talk about, Franco Ailman. He was a 10th round pick in 2021. Got converted to the bullpen. Was not pitching great at Lake County, but got promoted to Akron, and he's been pitching great there. So, good for him. Alexfri Planez missed most of the beginning of the season, got to play 7 games, and then has just been added to the 60-day injured list in Akron with a left foot fracture. So, pretty much a complete lost season for outfielder prospect Alexfri Planez.
Baseball is cruel.
Yep. The good news is with Bo Naylor going to Cleveland, Brian LaVistita got promoted back to Columbus from Akron. So, you know, he was a guy that was on our 40-man roster for a while, even started the 2022 season in Cleveland as a backup catcher. And he is back up in Columbus. He's been hitting a lot better in Akron lately. So looks like he's starting to turn it around. Might work his way back to MLB. Then Yordis Valdez was placed on the injured list in Lake County with a finger sprain, so doesn't seem too serious. Right-hand pitcher Peyton Battenfield has begun a rehab assignment. Was pitching in Akron last I saw, so great to see us potentially adding a little bit of starting pitching depth again. Justin Boyd, outfielder, was placed on the injured list in Lake County with a left shoulder sprain. Guy Lipscomb, outfielder, was placed on the injured list in Lynchburg with a fractured left wrist, so that's not good. As we mentioned, Jack Lethwich was activated from his shoulder injury in Akron. And then the last two, Ethan Hankins was activated from the injured list in Lake County, actually made a one-inning start the other day, did not give up a run, so good to see. And Shane McCarthy voluntarily retired. He was a former draft pick. Let me see what year he was drafted. He was a college guy. He was an 18th round pick in 2018. So voluntarily retired. He was pitching at AA this season. And that is all of our most significant transactions.
So I believe it's time to transition to some discussion of the Major League Baseball amateur player draft.
Yes.
I know nothing about these guys, Brian. I just have to be honest with you.
That's okay, because I followed every single pick in the draft. I was pulling up resources on and scouting reports, and I wrote 3 articles about our top 3 draft picks. I am your go-to resource for anything you want to know about some of these guys. So we're not going to talk about every single pick. I mean, Cleveland made 21 selections in 20 rounds. They had one each round plus a competitive balance pick in the second round. But I will go over some of my favorites and highlights of some of the more, you know, really interesting players. So I'm assuming you want to talk about their first round pick first.
Sure. Okay. The Guardians drafted Ralphie Velasquez from Huntington Beach.
What would you say the one thing Cleveland needs the most out of anything right now on their MLB roster? Ralphie Velasquez is slug. He is a catcher, but can also play first base, and was a high school player. So he is the first, you know, high school catcher we drafted since Bo Naylor. And this guy hits dongs. Good ability to make contact. And then when he does make contact, it is loud contact. He was, I think, one of the top prep hitters or the top prep hitter in California. And the guy is just huge. I mean, he is 6'3", 215 as a high schooler.
That's big for catcher, yeah, too.
For anybody that was, you know, upset, hoping we'd draft a right-handed power hitter, sorry, he's left-handed. Another lefty. But the dude hits dongs. Like, he is the first time that I can remember us taking somebody that is like power as his top thing in the first round. I can't ever remember us doing that. Like, we took Bobby Bradley in the third round, you know, back in like 2014 or something, but might have even been before that. Probably was before that. But that's the highest I've ever seen us take like a power bat. So I'm really interested to see what he does.
Very exciting that the bat is the calling card, but he also has the capability to play catcher. And in the article that you contributed to coveringthecorner.com, you featured a tweet from Peter Flaherty III. Not going to mince words here, Ralphie flat out rakes. Strong arm behind the plate as well, as mentioned.
And he has apparently a very quick pop time. So from what I read, you know, he's not a great framer, but hey, by the time he's to MLB, we don't have to worry about framing. I'm guessing by then we'll have an automated strike zone. So who cares that he can't frame? He has a cannon arm and a quick pop time. So that is really what matters for throwing base runners out.
The run game is more important than ever.
Yep.
Hmm.
So And he can play first base if, you know, Bo's taking up all of the catching. But again, we don't have to worry about that. I mean, he's a high school player. You know, Bo Naylor was drafted in, what, 2018? So
right,
that it's was 5 years ago, and he is just now here, and we're all excited about him now. So it takes time. You got to remember, this guy's not going to be in Cleveland tomorrow.
But your point about the odds of there being a robot strike zone by the time he makes it to the major leagues is very interesting and interesting. And it's also intriguing and interesting.
something
I'm going to think about that a lot.
Something else I'm going to say about this draft class is there were some changes made to like how you sign players, and they all the players Cleveland signed have to be added to like their roster of minor league players that is a limited number. It's like 180. They all have to be added by like a set deadline that's during this season. Previously, Cleveland would just wait and not have the last few seasons and not have any of those guys actually debut the year they were drafted. And then you'd see them all debut full season the next year. But you're going to see a lot of these guys playing this year because they have to be added to Cleveland's list of 180 minor league players all immediately. So I think you're going to see Ralphie Velasquez playing at the Complex League. You're going to see a lot of these high school pitchers that Cleveland ended up taking. You're going to see them pitching in the Complex League. I don't know how many of the college pitchers we'll be seeing, maybe a few, because there were a couple that had shortened seasons due to injuries that need the reps, but maybe a few of those college arms that pitched the whole season will not be debuting. But I think everybody else, you're going to be seeing a lot of them. So it'll be very interesting.
And so a couple of the guys that we might end up seeing then, two picks in the second round this year. One was the 58th pick, and another one was a competitive balance round B pick.
So
who did we take?
All right, that 58th pick, we took Alex Clemmy. Now, this is a boom or bust pick. He is a 6'6" high school senior, throws left-handed. He's out of Rhode Island. So, you know, a northern player that, he throws 100 miles an hour already as a high school senior. The problem is, people said he has potentially the worst control of anybody that was in the top 250.
Yeah, but he's a 6'6" lefty. He throws 100.
Yeah. So Cleveland, it's kind of the opposite of what Cleveland does, where they will take a guy that has elite control and then add some miles per hour to him, like they did with Tanner Bibee. This is they got the guy that already throws 100 miles an hour, and they have to add the control. And I don't know if they've ever done that before. So that's going to be really interesting. This is going to be a challenge for the Cleveland pitching machine to see what they can do with Alex Clemmy. But I'm very interested, like, because if they can, you know, this guy could be, you know, our best pitching prospect in the entire system if he can throw strikes. So very, very interested in him. Our competitive balance pick in the second round, Andrew Walters. He was a college senior, and he was a reliever only, and he throws 90% fastballs, but he was untouchable. It was one of the best fastballs in all of college baseball. He was the closer for Miami, and he was just straight up filthy. Jeff Ellis, if you know who he is on Twitter, he said that he thinks Andrew Walters might be the first guy from the 2023 draft that makes the big leagues, like could just explode through Cleveland's system. So I'm very interested to see what he does because, you know, very Nick Sandlin-esque is what I'm hearing. And if Cleveland can help him find another pitch to go with his fastball, then, you know, he could be a dominant reliever.
And it's not like he's been facing bad competition.
Yeah, he was
in the ACC.
ACC is one of the best leagues for college baseball. It's SEC, ACC, Pac-10. Those are usually the three that get the most love. And ACC, Cleveland went ACC heavy. They went big time ACC heavy. If you look, they took Andrew Walters, In the third round, they took a guy from Miami. In the fourth round, they took a guy from Clemson. In the sixth round, they took a guy from Wake Forest. In the seventh round, they took a guy from Duke. They weren't messing around with the ACC this year.
Also interesting. I wonder to what extent front offices calibrate the strength of competition in a given college league. So I imagine that would be easier to suss out than high school.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I mean, Chase DeLauder was what? Like a pretty small school last year, and they took him in the first round. So, because I think they also, you know, they factor in how somebody performs in the Cape Cod League too, because that's where, you know, who cares what league you're in? You're facing the best of the best, and it's wood bats. So it is like the closest you're going to see to actual professional baseball too. And I think that they take a lot of stock, even though it's a small sample size. They take a ton of stock in how a player performs there.
Those are the highlights for the Guardians from the top of the draft. Who are some of the other players that you are intrigued by from the draft class?
Yeah, I think Alex Mooney is somebody that they drafted. He was the next highest ranked in terms of MLB.com's prospect rankings, draft rankings. He was higher ranked than their competitive balance pick, Walters, who was, I think, ranked 124 overall. Mooney was 114. So the only guys ranked higher than Mooney were Clemmy and Velasquez. Mooney was a guy that was an elite high school prospect. A lot of people thought he was going to get drafted and go in 2020 as a high schooler. Ended up going to Duke, had really good seasons at Duke, and was a four-year sophomore. So a draft eligible sophomore. He's going to be somebody to pay attention to. I think he's a shortstop with a lot of hit, and he's right-handed hitting for once. So highly recommend checking out Alex Mooney. Matt Wilkinson stood out to me. He was a JUCO guy. He was our 10th round pick. This guy is built like David Wells. You remember David Wells? I'm not joking. This guy is huge. and he pitched at the junior college level, but he also pitched in the Cape and pitched extremely well. And he was committed, I think, to go to Arizona State next year, and Cleveland drafted him. So it's just, I want to see him pitch. I just want to see this guy on the mound. I mean, he is monstrous. He is, let's see here. Yeah. 6'1", 270. Yeah, he is a big boy. Like he literally could not fight in the UFC because you have to be 265 is the heavyweight limit.
If he goes on a little cut, he could sneak into the
octagon, he could probably cut 5 pounds, but still, I'm just saying that's nuts. Like, so he's somebody I'm really, really interested in. Something I heard, Cleveland ended up drafting 3 catchers, by the way. They took a catcher in the 4th round. They took a catcher in the 11th round as well. I heard really good things about the catcher they took in the 11th round out of Washington, bilingual, just a complete gamer, good power, good hitter, great defender. Yeah. Johnny Tincher. And then something that really surprised me was, you know, Cleveland took a ton of position players in the first 2 days of the draft. Out of the first 11 picks, they only took 4 pitchers. So they really went position player heavy. They took CJ Kafis, who was a first base / outfielder for Miami. They took another catcher, Cooper Engel. They took a shortstop, Christian Napsick. They took an outfielder, Tommy Hawk. Shortstop, Alex Mooney. Outfielder, Jonah Advincula. Just really, really interesting that they went so position player heavy. But in rounds 11 through 20, they went pitcher heavy. They took, out of those 10 picks, 8 were pitchers. And what surprised me was a lot of them were college pitchers. Let's see. The Jacob Bresnahan was a left-handed high school senior in the 13th round. Keegan Zinn, a right-handed high school senior in the 12th round. This one blew my mind. Mac Hewer, homeschooled. in the 16th round, the Georgia Home Education Association.
Speaking of strength of competition.
What I read was he was homeschooled because he helped out on the family farm. His family owned a huge farm in Georgia.
Okay, so, this just got so much more awesome.
That's and the awesome. Guy throws the mid to upper 90s as a 6'4" high school senior. But he's 19 years old. So, yeah. So, really, really interesting dude. And then their last round pick, Ryan Marrone, 6'2" high school senior out of Freedom High School in Virginia. So, yeah, they took 5 high school players, pitchers, in rounds 10 through 20. So they are completely restocking the Arizona Complex League pitching ranks. Like this is a long-term investment. Like they have 6 high school senior pitchers that they ended up drafting and 1 high school position player.
And so, 3 of them from more or less the same region, 2 of them from Georgia.
So I'm really interested to see how those guys perform, and they're probably all going to be debuting in Arizona within the next, well, it depends when they signed and everything. Usually Cleveland likes to, the announcements about their signings get trickled in over a period of time, and then they have a special signing day where they make it all official on the exact same day. That's what they did the last year, and then they'll probably send all of them to their assignments, since they're a lot of them are all gonna play this year. Yeah, I think it was an interesting draft. They went away from things that they do normally well. Like they went power first with Velasquez. They went, power pitching high school first with Clemmy. And they have not had the most success with high school pitchers. I mean, Tristan McKenzie is like the one bright spot. You look at every other high school pitcher they've drafted, they have not been able to get them to major leagues yet. I think Sam Henches was the other one, but he did it as a reliever. But, Espino hurt. Hankins hurt. Lenny Torres got hurt. It's really interesting. Brady Aiken got hurt. So will they be able to, use that pitching machine on Clemmy?
Only time will tell. But it is exciting to hear that it's much more likely we'll see some of these players this season. So that brings us to the end of this week's podcast, unless there's anything else that you have, Brian?
I think that does it, but I think we do have one last thing we like to do before the end of each podcast.
I have a wonderful poem written by E.E. Gammings, if I may share.
Go ahead.
Sean Dubin inexplicably ran around the clubhouse last Thursday carrying a hat and shouting, "Team prongs me! Team prongs me!" Oh.